Good morning, everybody. It's been a pleasure. Elliot, thank you for the opportunity to share God's word with you these last two Sundays. Story is told of a man called Jim. He had an interview for his dream job. Downtown Chicago. I don't know if you ever had to find a parking spot in downtown Chicago. This is before Spot Hero. Okay? He's driving around for a half an hour, and he's this close to being late for his dream interview. Jim's not a religious man. What do they say? There are no atheists in foxholes. He's at a light. He's panicking. He actually closes his eyes. Lord, I know I haven't been too good of a Christian, understatement, but if you just let me find a parking spot, I'll promise to go to Solid Rock every Sunday. I'll replay it online. I'll take notes on the sermon. I'll read my Bible every day, and I'll spend more time playing with the kids. He opens his eyes. The light turns green. And right over there, somebody pulls out of a parking lot. He goes, "Never mind, Lord. I found one on my own." Today, we're going to look at a story of prayer. Please turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 32. Genesis chapter 32, verse 7. This is the story of Jacob. Last Sunday, we looked at Nehemiah's prayer. Nehemiah is a model of how to pray. He's not perfect, but there's a lot of good stuff. I should do more of what Nehemiah did. This is a model of how not to pray. But by highlighting what he did wrong, we can see what we should do. I'll read the passage and I'll give you the backstory afterwards. And I better give you the backstory. So Jacob's, maybe you know the story. Jacob's brother was Esau. One day Esau is coming home after a long hunt and he's famished. Jacob has a big pot of stew and Esau says, "Hey, can I have some?" The reasonable answer would be, "Sure, there's plenty to go around, help yourself." But Jacob's a wheeler dealer. He says, "Give me the birthright." Esau impulsively says, "Fine, if I starve to death now, the birthright's not gonna do me any good." Takes it, and then later Jacob deceives his father, dresses up like Esau, because his father's blind, deceives his father, Jacob gets the birthright. Now, 20 years later, Esau threatens to kill. "I'm gonna kill him, wait till dad dies, then I'm gonna kill him." Jacob runs for his life. 20 years later, Esau's coming to meet Jacob. Oh, with 400 men with him. Now, I don't know if he's going to kill him. You got a man of the woods versus a man of the kitchen. Who do you think is going to win that one? But Jacob is terrified. And so with that context, verse 7, Genesis 32, 7, "In great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two flocks." So that would be his wives and his kids. "Divided them into two groups, and the flocks and herds and camels as well. He thought if Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that is left may escape." So you see, this man wants to solve problems on his own. He's still trying to wheel and deal and manage the situation. Verse 8, "He thought if Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that's left may escape." Verse 9, "Then Jacob prayed, 'O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper.'" God, you owe me, okay? We got the family thing, you promised. He's still wheeling and dealing, even with God. Verse 10, "I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I have become two groups. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I'm afraid he will come and attack me." Yeah. "And also the mothers with their children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted." So I call this last minute prayers. Let's talk about Jacob's prayer life. He waited too long to pray. Now, we don't have everything that Jacob did. By this point, he's in his 90s. Imagine if we did a full account of something you do every day for 90 years, the book would be too big. But this is the first recorded prayer of Jacob when he's 90 years old. It was not the first time he was in a tight spot. but the first time we have a recorded prayer. He waited too long. He waited something like 90 years. I have a question for you. It's not a trick question. What are some procedures that doctors use to diagnose what's going on inside? I'll give an example. X-ray. Okay? What are some other ones?
CT scan.
Say? A CT scan, uh-huh. MRI, uh-huh. How about? Blood test, right? Just find out what's not apparent to the eye. We are going to give Jacob's prayer life an MRI. You can learn a lot about a person if you understand how they pray. And the pictures that come back are not going to be pretty. And yet, as we'll see at the end, God still uses this very imperfect prayer from a very imperfect man. Well, I'm glad, because I'm a very imperfect man who prays very imperfectly. He waited too long. He waited, as far as we can tell, something like 90 years. I don't know for a fact that he never prayed, but I think it's consistent with his personality that he waited. One of my granddaughters, she's 4 years old. She's very independent. We're on the playground. I said, "You need something?" "No, I got this. I got this." A few minutes later, she's dangling from the edge of a playground equipment. Her feet are 4 feet off the ground. She's not going to hurt. "Grandpa!" Okay. Jacob was the "I got this" person. It's more understandable for a four-year-old on the playground in relation to grandpa than Jacob in his relationship with God. 90 years. Okay, so I actually did the math. I am that big of a nerd. 90 years is 1,200 months, 5,200 weeks, 36,500 days, 876,000 hours, 52,560,000 minutes he waited to pray. Think of the stages of life where he apparently didn't pray. In childhood, what child is never afraid of the dark? Weren't most of us afraid of the dark? You were at an unfamiliar place, and the lights went out. Time to go to sleep now. But apparently, he never said, "Jesus, dear God, I'm scared. Comfort me." Didn't happen. Teenage years with the ups and downs, relationships, didn't happen. Esau, as far as we know, Esau says, "I'm going to kill him." Jacob finds out. At that moment, there's no recorded prayer. All the stages of life. He got married. He had two wives. I always wonder, what did he say when he came in from the field after working? "Hi, honeys, I'm home." He had kids. If having a child doesn't motivate you to pray, what on earth will? All these stages of life. And as far as we know, he didn't pray. He waited too long. I could really beat him up for this, except I wait too long, too. So first recorded prayer was in his 90s. We don't know exactly how old he was. A quote from Rick Warren: "If you only pray when you feel like it, Satan will make sure like you never feel like it." I can think of a lot of reasons why we don't pray more. Here's my imaginary friend, George. He's a good guy. He loves God. He comes to church. His heart is in the right place. He's not perfect, but he's a good guy. And he's a good Christian, but he doesn't pray as much as he should. I can say that about him. He gave me permission. And reasons we don't pray: we get busy. We forget. We get discouraged. But Jacob brings up another one that I hadn't honestly thought about. It's the "I got this." I got this. Sometime in the last few years, I was given a devotional at Judson. It might have been one of our department ones, Elliot, I don't know. And that's something I really enjoy doing, and it's in my skill set. I hope that doesn't sound bad. And I actually did not pray even one time to ask God to help me until 15 minutes before I delivered it. That's terrible. That is terrible. Think about your own life. What's your skill set? What are you really good at? Are you maybe tempted to overlook the need to pray in that area of your life? I don't know a thing about fixing cars. So if something goes wrong with one of our cars, I think I'm quicker to pray. But if I have to put together a lesson for my teaching, I can be an "I got this" person. That was Jacob. "I got this." So there was too much time that went by, he didn't pray, and then he ignored the trouble signs. Some of them we've talked about. Esau threatening to kill him. This rough and rugged woodsman, probably, you know, handle a knife, bow and arrow, and any kind of weapon. And Jacob was kind of a mama's boy, and that's okay. That's okay. It's good to be close to your mother, and he was good at cooking. There's nothing wrong with that. But a one-on-one battle, he would have no chance. There's no recorded prayer there. And if I'm the Lord, I'm thinking, what have I got to do to get this guy to pray? That's not the only trouble sign he ignored. When he leaves home, he goes to work for a relative, Laban. And Laban is Jacob, an older version of Jacob. He's a wheeler dealer who schemes and tries to keep changing the terms of the employment. Let's imagine that you are in sales. You get a contract. You're going to get $50,000 a year. After the first year, the boss says, this isn't working out to my advantage. I want to change it. I want to make it commission-based. You earn this much commission on each sale. You get no flat salary. And then you kill it. You're selling left and right now. Whoops. Boss comes back and keeps changing the terms. God is holding a mirror, a full-length mirror up to Jacob. Say, Jacob, this is you. This is what you look like. When we're blind to our own sin, sometimes we see it in somebody else. God's waving a flag. Hello, does this behavior look familiar? There's no recorded prayer from Jacob. Too much time went by. Too many troubles. So my personal example. Somebody close to my wife and I is going through a divorce. We're very involved, listening on the phone, helping, encouraging in various ways, a lot of time. We got off the phone with this person this week, and I said to my wife, if you and I don't pray a lot about the situation, then there's a serious hole in our faith. We say we believe in God. We say we believe in prayer. And if we don't pray, we have a problem. Can I be honest with you? That day I did pretty well. I prayed about it a lot. Then the next day, not as much. The situation wasn't solved. It's going to be ongoing for quite a while. If I were the Lord, I'd be frustrated with me and with others. What have I got to do to get that guy to pray? Those of you who are over maybe 30, I'm not sure, might not remember phone booths. There used to be these glass enclosures big enough for one person to stand comfortably. You close the door, and there was a phone there called a pay phone. Before cell phones, you're on the road, you need to make a phone call. You pull over, you put in some coins, and then you make a phone call. One of my teachers said, kind of a humorous comment, when her husband was late, coming home from work, where he wouldn't call. He was a good guy, but he wouldn't call. She said, he could be trapped in a phone booth with a bucket of coins and he still wouldn't call. Sorry for the dated example. And God must think about some of us. He needs help. She needs help, but she won't call. Think about sports. You may not be the world's biggest sports enthusiast. Here's a basketball game. A bunch of middle schoolers. And here's LeBron James, one of the best players in the NBA. And there's 10 seconds to go, and the team is down by 1 point. LeBron's standing over here, and they don't pass him the ball. It's like, well, that would never happen. That would never happen. But I live my life, and God is standing on the court. Are you going to ask me for help? Are you going to pass me the ball? Jacob didn't. In his book, The Problem of Pain, C.S. Lewis argues that one of the roles that pain has is to draw us to God. He says, pain is God's megaphone to rouse a deaf world. Now, I want to be careful. It doesn't mean that every time you have some kind of pain in your life, it's because you wandered far from God. There could be a lot of things going on. But as believers, we should use the pain in our life as a reminder to pray. You remember this story? The disciples come to Jesus. Someone was blind. Lord, who sinned? Was it this man sin or was it his parent? No, it wasn't that. It wasn't that. It was something else. So the physical or emotional pain you have might not be because of your sin. It could be something else going on. But let it be a reminder. Let it be a trigger. Let it be a doorbell that's ringing that reminds you, oh, we need to pray about this. Yeah, our grandkids were over to our house. And the oldest one is 10. Bentley is 10 years old. He was trying to get a rod and reel going. There were some problems with the line, and I'm no help. I was trying, but I'm no help. And I was surprised and pleased. He's trying to thread through a narrow spot. He's trying to get it on the bobber. I think that's what it's called. And it was hard. And he says, Dear Jesus, please help me get this in there. Right? That's practical faith. Practical faith. Would you read this out loud with me? Ready? If you only pray when you are in trouble, then you are in trouble. That's a problem, isn't it? I want you to imagine you have young kids, you're babysitting. Kids are playing outside, they're doing a great job, riding the bike. It's a warm day, life is good. One of them falls and skins the knee. Do you remember skin knees? Some of those hurt a lot. Skin knee, little boy, we'll call him Bobby. He's wailing, he's 6 years old. He's wailing. He can move, he doesn't need a doctor visit, doesn't need an ER, but it hurts. What does he do? Does he just stay on the sidewalk wailing? Or does he go running into the house? Probably running into the house, whoever is there. Mommy, Grandpa! What happens in our spiritual life? We skin our knees. I got this. And the Lord's like, I'm here. Preparing this for the last few weeks has been really needed and good for me. What do you think of that statistic? You think that's about right? You think it's too high or too low? I heard a few of you say too. I don't know. I looked up on the internet, so it must be true, right? If we only go to God when we're in trouble, that's unfortunate. But Jacob didn't even do that for a long time. So too much time went by. Too much trouble came by. I was talking to a friend who's dealing with a lot of problems. He says to me, honestly, I gotta say, this is the first time I've prayed in years. So too much time went by, too much trouble went by. Mr. Wheeler Dealer, he couldn't pull it off this time. He ran away from the problem that worked for 20 years, but then he had problems with Laban, and so he left that, the relative who was cheating him and changing the rules. And now he's in a situation that's bigger than him and he can't handle it. And so finally, he prays. There's a verse in the Psalms that some of us sing. I'm guessing you know it. As the deer panteth for the water, so my soul longeth after thee. And it's a good song. If you sing it, I hope you keep singing it. I always thought it was a good expression, musical expression of our longing for God. It is that, but you read the rest of the chapter. If you have a Bible, turn to Psalm 42. I'll get there eventually. Psalm 42, verse 1. I'm reading for the NIV. As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, O God. Go down to verse 3. My tears have been my food day and night, while men say to me all day long, where is your God? So it was trouble that was driving. Is that David? Sons of Korah. Trouble that was driving the author to God. The song takes in a little different direction. That's fine. That's fine. Lord, everything I'm trying isn't working. Do we pray first or do we pray last? So from time to time we lose things, right? Where's my keys? Where's my wallet? There have been times when I've looked everywhere and asked my wife, who knows better than I do where my things are, and I still can't find it. And then I pray. I should pray on the front end. I should pray first. Now, it's theoretically possible that a person would start praying over, Lord, help me take my next step, and my next step, and help me to breathe, or whatever, get a little carried away. I've never known another person that's over praise. I'm not worried that any of us, if you're in physical therapy, you're learning to walk again, yeah, it makes sense to pray over every step. I'm not worried that you or I are going to over pray. So, I've touched on it, but the question is, why was Jacob's prayer life poor? I think it's because he was a self-made man. He had the I got this mentality. And in a lot of ways, he was pretty shrewd and pretty clever. He was a business person. He would be the person wheeling and dealing, the entrepreneur, and building an empire and bringing lots of money and like, yeah, looks like it's working. Well, it sort of did for a long time. Then all came down and he finally had to pray. When we say in today's society that so-and-so in the business world is a self-made man, a self-made woman, we often mean as a compliment, I think. Boy, he paid for all his own schooling. He had to work a full-time job, 4 years of college. He started his business with $10, and he traded, and he made some shrewd deals, and he built it up, and look at him now, like, wow, and it is a compliment. And that's good. But in the spiritual realm, God does not want self-made men. Does not want self-made women. Hudson Taylor was a career missionary. If you don't know the name, he's worth looking into. Someone has given him a nice introduction. I want to introduce this great man of God, Hudson Taylor. In my opinion, he is a great man of God. Hudson Taylor got up to the podium and says, there are no great men or women of God. There are only little men in the hands of a great God. And God will take any amount he'll spare, no time or trouble, to teach someone to rely on him. That's the story of Jacob. God is, what have I got to do to get you to turn to me? And then finally when he does, we did read this part, this chapter, Ellie, you're probably like, you're leaving out the best passage, you're right. He prays, this man who prays too little, too late, there's wheeling and dealing in the prayer, and then God calls him a prince with God. An imperfect man prayed an imperfect prayer, and he blesses him. Give me some of that. I'm an imperfect man with imperfect prayers. You know what? Keep praying your imperfect prayers. At least you're praying. So I'm going to give you two types of homework today. Chris, I'll tell you something. I'll give you your homework. I don't look at Facebook much occasionally. I have some friends, various points of the political spectrum, who write some really well-written pieces arguing for a point of view about what's going on in the country or the world. They probably spent an hour or two crafting that. And I learned from those, and those are well-written, but I say to myself, I wonder if they prayed about that. They're bent out of shape over something Trump has or hasn't done. Or the Democrats, or the Iraqis, or whoever, the price of gas, whatever. 2 hours crafting that really well-written piece that I learned from, but did they take 10 seconds to pray? So here's your homework. When you misplace them, okay, let's get this straight. You and I don't lose things. We just don't know where they are right now. Okay, you with me? I didn't lose my keys. I just can't put my hands on them at this moment. The next time that happens, keys, wallet, whatever, pray first. The moment you realize you don't know where it is, pray first. Oh, I'll probably find it. Why are you putting on praying? What's up with that? Pray first. Help each other out with that. The second thing is, so when something's missing, pray first. When you hear a complaint. Now, when somebody's brokenhearted over, I just got fired, and it was so unfair, and this and that. Well, the problem with you is you need to pray. Don't be doing that. Listen to them and give them your heart, and then say, could I pray for you right now? Or if they can't, if they wouldn't accept that, go ahead and pray. But pray earlier in the sequence. So the two areas of homework are when there's a complaint when we lose something, misplace something. When there's a complaint or a problem. If you're with a close friend, oh, stinking cost of gas. I have to drive an hour every day. You know how much I'm paying? You're right, Joe. We should pray about that right now. There's a song now Eric's going to play. Oh, sorry. I guess I should. He was a self-made man. There we go. To encourage us to pray. Prayer is one of the most unnatural things that you and I can do. We're talking to somebody that we can't see, and we can't hear a voice back. So it's hard. So I need to be encouraged to pray, and perhaps you do too.